going to have a little chat, then we're going to take a half hour break. Okay, you can be seated. Be seated. We're going to take a half hour break here in just a minute. Just be seated. We're going to have a little chat, little dialogue, and then we'll take a break. Please be seated. Thanks. Any questions? Let's have up to 20 minutes of questions if we want that long. Not that long. Any questions or concerns? Raise your hand. Someone will come with the microphone. Here you go.
Would you just repeat that last phrase? We find ourselves on the outer circumference.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes, yeah, yes. I'm living trapped on the outer circumference of the inner richness of the life that I'm living. That's the thing. Like the centrifugal force of our concerns, we spin out to the edge and we're homesick for the center. See? And I'm trapped out here, exiled. See? How do I find my way home? Yes.
Say it again.
Yes, sure. Yeah. I want to back up a little bit again. The question becomes relevant in a moment where we fleetingly taste homecoming. You know, I mean, we taste oneness in love or solitude or birth or death, whatever it is, art, music. We taste it. Then in tasting it, the intimate experience of oneness dissipates. And as it dissipates, we return back to our worrisome self. And remembering the moments of awakening, I ask myself this question, which is the seeker's question. It's really the gift of God to ask this question. Why do I spend so many of my waking hours trapped on the outer circumference of the inner richness of the life that I'm living? By the way, a deep insight into addiction is understanding a distorted strategy to resolve this dilemma. One finds a shortcut, 80-proof shortcut, with ice in it. And it seems to be working fine for a while, but things are just getting worse. But what we're really looking for is how can my heart be quickened? And by the way, it's when you walk around this way, when you walk around, Thomas Merton describes Sunday afternoon in the monastery. And by the way, Sunday afternoon in the monastery was just like every other day, except there was no manual labor. So there was no TV, there was no radio, we never talked to each other. And there was no outside ministry, you lived behind these walls. And it was manual labor and prayer and silence. And Sunday was the same, except no manual labor. So you still got up at 2:30 in the morning to get a head start on this nothingness. And with no diversion, 18 years old. And Merton, right, this is a great quote. He said, "The young monks lean sadly up against walls, asking questions that have no answers. The old monks are silent because they've given up interest in speech." And the way home, see, is a lonely, solitary path of a great surrender. See? And it's like that. Anyone else with anything?
You had a wonderful quote about the road and the shadow of death. Where did that come from? From Thomas Merton, I think it was.
The quote that I gave today?
Yes.
Both of those are from New Seeds of Contemplation. Okay. And the first quote about death is, "Nothing will be left of me but my own mistake." I think that's chapter 36, page 36 and 37, I think. You'll see it there. I think it's Pray for Your Own Identity. I think it's the chapter Pray for Your Own Identity in New Seeds of Contemplation. And the Cosmic Dance is the last two paragraphs of New Seeds of Contemplation.
Thank you.
Morning.
Hi.
Sometimes in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous or other 12-step programs, you'll hear the question from the newcomer, what's the fastest way to recovery? And the answer that people are given is slowly. So I sit here and I listen to your beautiful speech and your words, and I want to get lost in that place. And I'm going to leave here today, and I'm going to go outside, and the horns are going to be honking, and the lights are going to be blinking, and I'm not going to be in this place that I want to be. How do I get to be in this place for more hours in the day?
Any other questions?
Isn't that the question? Seriously, I mean, under optimal conditions, we got half a chance, you know. You hit the freeway.
See, this is the question. But see, there's a certain tender sadness in the question, which is its sincerity. And it would go like this. Let's say you and I would talk afterwards one-on-one. And I would say to you, well, give me an example. You know, give me an example of where you find it difficult like this. And you would tell me. And in listening to you, I'd say, well, I have a question. I want to understand you better. You know what you're saying. I'm trying to understand this better. And the question I ask is such that you can't respond to me without listening more deeply to yourself. And when you speak, we listen together to that disclosure. And we talk back and forth a couple more minutes, and I say, well, I have another question. And out of the dialogue, your heart opens up. And you discover in the vulnerable intimacy of the obstacle, the taste of what you're looking for hidden in that obstacle. Does that make sense in a way? It's what AA meetings are like. Dude, we're spared from nothing, if you've noticed. And yet in the communal vulnerability of a world spared from nothing, we're so unexplainably sustained. And so later we're going to look at practice. Meditation practice creates optimal conditions to get our footing in this. So little by little by little, we can maintain it habitually in less than optimal conditions, which is the art of living. So we'll be talking about that. By the way, when you're faced with this dilemma, this is where it's so amazing to discover there are mystics. Thomas Merton once said, there are certain spiritual writers that ring your bell. And the mystic bears witness that Shunryu Suzuki says, the primary task of the spiritual teacher is to give witness to the seeker that what the seeker seeks is real. My heart has not deceived me because I intuit I'm in the presence of someone in whom it's been realized. This is possible. This is possible. I can learn to live in a daily abiding awareness of the depths so fleetingly glimpsed. And the mystic, the teacher, the transformed person in love bears witness to that possibility. And it's like that. Sure. Anything else? Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Findlay. Thank you, Jim. This is more of a comment than a question. Is that okay? In the conversation, or in the three questions of Merton that you presented, and this idea of, you know, how's it going, and am I a mystic yet, I was reminded of something that I discovered accidentally that speaks to that, which is that the depth of my negative reaction to any situation, if after that reaction I find the presence to take a pause, that moment so fleetingly glimpsed steps in. And this has happened to me enough that I trust it, but not and it has happened enough that it sustains me through the messiness. So it almost feels like a trick, but it is something, you know, I don't rely on it, it just seems to happen.
Yes. You know, this art, the gentle art of contemplative living, is discovering subtle things, like experiential things, like, so the pause. Rollo May has an essay called The Pause, the existential psychologist Rollo May. And he said, notice that an Olympic high diver, when they're standing on the platform, just before they dive, they pause. He said they dive out of the pause. And it's out of the pause, it renders the dive eloquent. Eloquent. If they didn't pause, their ego would dive. And in self-consciousness, they would it would get in its own way. So the person holds very still, and out of the pause. Notice in a loving dialogue with somebody, notice when you're really attentive to what the beloved is saying. Before you speak, you pause. But you're listening to what your heart prompts you to say. That pause, that disengagement from the reactive self, is the opening through which you can start to develop that habit. That way, it's true. Anyone else? Yes.
I have a comment and a question. I mean, it seems that, I mean, I like a definition for the word, in your opinion, of mysticism, of mystic. You know, what is it that defines that person, that characterizes it, besides kind of simplify, so that you're not worried about the external forces that the self creates?
Yes, so we'll be talking about this after the break, too, but let's listen. Was there a question over here, too? I'll respond to this, then we'll do one more, then take a half-hour break. An initial sense, where we're going after the break, on the mystic, a simple way to start clarifying what that means, like what's that word mean? I'd put it this way, some ways that I would put it would go like this. The mystic is someone who's come to realize that although I am not God, I'm not other than God either. See? Although I'm not any of you, I'm not other than any of you either. And although I am not the earth, I'm not other than the earth either. These moments of turning to see a flock of birds descending, knowing love in our own hearts, we're a momentary mystic. See, we're a fleeting mystic. The mystic is the man or woman who's become habituated in that unity of consciousness. See, is the mystic. Yeah. You also know, by the way, that even your inability to consistently live that way is God. See? Being poured out is the holiness of your inability to live this way. You know, which is good. It's one more, yes.
So I have a response to the gentleman who asked, how is it possible to more frequently reach a place of peace? So there is a way, there are several ways, but one is, comes from our thoughts, because our thoughts are things, and when we practice thinking better thoughts to replace negative thoughts, we are in touch with the, what I call, or we call, cooperative components that are out there on our vibrational level, and this is how we cause them to find us and for us to find them. And to use your term, we habituate ourselves in a different way. We now become positive thinkers. And when we become positive thinkers, we become more mystical. So we can train ourselves to be in a more peaceful and meditative place practically all the time if we do it long enough. That's been my experience.
No, yes, very good. I mean, I think a lot of psychology, the art of psychology, is cultivating behavioral cognitive strategies that can help a person be more habitually grounded in that. But then what we're talking about, though, is this. Let's say I refine those skills, see, to a very refined point. There remains that unconsummated longing within me that cannot be attained through such efforts. Because it's infinite. It's infinite. And they are no avail to me. See? And therefore, where do I go? See? Because if I could attain it through effort, it would be finite. See? And this is very important at the psychological level. All this is important for the art of being human. But what we're talking about is the quickening of our heart for an unconsummated longing that cannot be consummated through any effort at all, no matter how refined the effort, which is grace. See, our lives have become unmanageable, but a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And while I come to the edge of myself and wait for what I'm absolutely powerless to attain, and then what is the art form of that waiting like that? Yeah. And those are not two dualistically separate things. They go together. Yeah. So we take a break. Let's take a half hour break. How would that be? And we'll come back and go down into the depths of mystical union with God before lunch.
A quick word about the break so that you can find your way to coffee. There will be two coffee stations in Tucker Hall, which is, the tables have been moved out of the way where you registered, so just go up the steps into Tucker Hall, and there's another station in the gallery hallway. So please help yourself to coffee and refreshments, bathrooms, whatever you need, and we will ring a bell about 5 minutes before we're ready to return.